Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Joining me now to talk a little bit about the update of the COVID-19 situation here in San Juan County and at San Juan Regional Medical Center, we welcome back to KSJE, Dr. Brad Greenberg from San Juan Regional Medical Center. Dr. Greenberg, welcome back. It is always great to talk to you. I wish we weren't talking about this particular topic, but unfortunately, as we have said, COVID is still with us, and it is still with us, isn't it?
It totally is, you know, and thanks so much for having me back, and I'm so glad to talk about what's happening in our local community as it relates to COVID and how to make sense of the never-ending stream of information on whatever news platform that's out there. We'd love to bring science to everyone and make sure that everyone feels well-informed of what's happening in their own community.
No kidding. Very true. And I know, you know, a lot of folks, and I think rightly so, were very excited and pleased that the state lifted its restrictions on July the 1st. And, you know, things are getting back to what it seems to be normal, but we still hear these reports of the variants and cases still increasing in some areas of the world and of the country. And so, and I know for you and your colleagues at the hospital, you are still seeing COVID cases, are you not?
You know, we definitely are, and we actually are of the mind that COVID is likely here with us to stay,
right,
in some form or another. And we're very enthusiastic also about the New Mexico reopening as of July 1, and very happy the businesses were allowed to operate at 100% capacity and that mass gatherings can actually happen. But also really cognizant that the CDC, as well as the state of New Mexico, have made sure to differentiate that those folks that have had that vaccine, those folks don't need to wear masks in most places, but those folks that have not been vaccinated really need to continue masking. Super important for those folks because, as we're probably going to talk about in a minute or two, the Delta variant and many of these other changes are increasing the likelihood that these folks that have not been vaccinated may be vulnerable.
Right, and that's very true. And I would say, and I think the science backs up, that most of the new COVID infections in our country these days are taking place, I think it's 99% in the unvaccinated population?
Yeah, the vast majority of those folks that that are getting sick enough to be in the hospital or dying from COVID, you know, nearly 100%, like 99.5% are in the unvaccinated, which is super sad because I think that we really are now looking at severe COVID hospitalization and deaths related to COVID is by and large a preventable illness. We really want folks to get that vaccine, and it just markedly improves their anticipated outcomes, even if they were to contract COVID. You know, one of the things that I did want to mention, too, is that, you know, we still are seeing COVID. When we saw our numbers drop down to the single digits, you know, with COVID inpatients over the last couple weeks, and now with the rest of the country, and we know now that the world and I think 46 states are now having increasing rates of infection. That includes New Mexico. And so we're seeing our numbers locally on the inpatient side tick up just a bit, where now we've got, you know, as of this morning, 14 COVID positive patients or persons under investigation, still with a pretty big census of those folks that don't have COVID. But, you know, we're about ready to cross kind of a meaningful Rubicon here in our COVID inpatient numbers, is that we're about ready to cross 2,000 COVID inpatients that we've seen. We're just under that right now. And I'm proud to work for, you know, within this organization and within this community where we've done really a whole lot to do our best to try to take care of the community and the region when it comes to providing superior COVID care in the setting of this unprecedented pandemic. So we're crossing that line, and we're trying to take stock of where we've been and where we are, and how we can continue to provide this kind of care into the future.
Indeed. Well, and on behalf of the community, I think you all know, I hope you all know how grateful I think all of us are that the hospital has been there and managing this pandemic as best that we can, asking the public to try to, you know, keep from overwhelming our healthcare professionals during the very peak of COVID. And we unfortunately had several peaks over the last 15 months. And so, again, we all appreciate your efforts on behalf of yourself and your colleagues. But again, as you mentioned, COVID's not gone. It's not going away. It is probably going to be here with us forever. And the idea now is, how do we manage it? And that is with vaccines and education and being safe. And as you mentioned, if folks, for whatever reason, haven't gotten the vaccine, and again, it's a personal decision, I completely understand that. You have said before, if folks have a question about it, ask their personal physician, you know, if they have other healthcare health issues. But again, if you know, if they haven't gotten a vaccine, then they are at risk of this infection and at risk of these variants. And I guess that's where we can go to next, Dr. Greenberg, is this Delta variant is kind of different in that it's more infectious, is it not, and faster spreading than traditional COVID has been. Is that true?
You know, that does seem to be what has been represented in the research and the evidence. And,
okay.
You know, it's important to note, though, that viruses, they constantly change through mutation, and we are always expecting to see new variants of viruses. And sometimes new variants will emerge, sometimes they'll disappear, sometimes they'll persist. We've had multiple variants of COVID-19 that have been documented around the world and within the United States during the pandemic. And we carefully study these viruses to learn how that virus may change, how it either spreads or how sick people could get from it. And because, you know, some of these variations with viruses can allow it to spread more easily or perhaps make it more resistant to treatments or vaccines. And so that's why we look at these variants very carefully. Now, we've followed a number of variants that are really variants, what they call variants of concern. And sometimes there's these two classifications. They're a little bit confusing. They're variants of interest. Those are ones that look like they're popping up on the radar, but may not necessarily, we don't really know how they're going to impact transmission between humans and whatnot. And there's variants of concern. Those are ones that throughout the international public health organizations, they're worried about what's going to happen with them. The most familiar one is likely the one that was started in the UK. We now associate these with letters of the Greek alphabet. So we call that one Alpha. And that became the dominant strain within the United States, really taking the place of the original, or what we call the wild type variant. So now we're looking at this other variant, Delta. Now, keep in mind, there have been there was a beta and a gamma and two epsilons, and now we have a Delta. The Delta, which is originally from India, was first detected in the United States in March of 2021. Now it's really throughout the entire country, and it looks to be the predominant strain, first in the state of Missouri, and now really throughout the country. And we expect it to supplant Alpha as the primary variant strain within the United States. Delta does look like it is usually associated with a higher viral load in a host, and that makes sense that it would spread more easily and more quickly than other variants. We're also seeing in unvaccinated populations that Delta spreads very rapidly and then has a resultant pressure on healthcare infrastructure because of the increase in hospitalizations and resultant deaths as well. So Delta really is very concerning. In those areas in the country that are not well vaccinated, we think about vaccination rates, you know, 40%, 35%, those environments, especially within the states of Missouri and Arkansas, look like they're having exponential spread of the Delta variant. And so we remain concerned and really vigilant about what's going on with the Delta variant, and cognizant also that within our own community, especially within those communities of Aztec, Bloomfield, and the eastern portion of Farmington, we have lower vaccination rates. And so, again, right. I strongly implore people to consider getting vaccinated as soon as possible to reduce the potential impact of COVID-19, the Delta variants, or any future variants.
Very true. I was going to say, even though New Mexico reached its kind of 60% mark to reopen July 1st, we know that there are pockets in our state, pockets in our county, as you mentioned, Dr. Greenberg, that are below, way below that 60% vaccination rate number. And that poses a risk to those communities and to others that in other communities who maybe haven't been vaccinated. And so that's kind of what you're talking about. And I know that the Department of Health has released vaccination information and percentages by zip code. And that's what you're talking about, is those other communities like Aztec and La Plata and Bloomfield, I believe, and some of those other places, eastern San Juan County, are not as highly vaccinated as, say, the western sections of San Juan County, and that is from the Department of Health.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think one thing that's important is that, you know, these communities, are, you know, I don't like to think of them as there's no walls around them, and we don't have any interruption in travel or anything. This is our community. There just happen to be areas where there are some lower vaccination rates. And, you know, we really would like to interrupt this chain of transmission in the virus, reducing the likelihood that variants could emerge. But also, we want to protect the entire community. We want to get out of this pandemic. We want to make the pandemic something that we can look at in the rearview mirror. And the tool to do that is really getting one of the, approved and effective vaccinations that's available now. We want to protect the community. We want to protect today and protect the future.
Right. And I would say, again, to folks who have concerns about the vaccine, we talked about, you know, asking, telling your doctor, but look at the numbers. And again, as these rates have fallen across the world and across the country, and I think you yourself mentioned this on one of our programs, it is entirely because of the effectiveness of the vaccine, right?
I think that what we're seeing right now is, you know, actually, let me back up a second.
Okay.
The how we controlled the pandemic before was a constellation of efforts. And like I've mentioned before, we reduced the rates of transmission because of some of the individual choices that people were making, putting on masks, washing their hands, social distancing, and really bending over backwards to reduce the transmission, the associated risk, and the community burden of COVID-19. Now, the vaccination really is just this incredible tool that has really been a game changer when it comes to looking at the present and the future for COVID-19 management, and that we are so fortunate to have not one, not two, but three very effective vaccinations that are really good at preventing severe COVID. And the vaccination has allowed us, you know, with vaccinated populations, to suppress the transmission of the virus enough to reopen. But our reopening is contingent upon the effectiveness of the vaccine and also the continuing sum of our individual choices, making good choices. And especially, you know, I know it can be frustrating for those folks that are yet unvaccinated. But if you're unvaccinated, first, unless you have a specific medical exemption or whatnot, I'd implore you to get vaccinated and consider doing that. Get all your questions answered and whatnot. But then if you're not vaccinated also, you know, I also would ask you to continue using some of those important public health measures to reduce the likelihood that you could get sick or others could get sick, from COVID-19.
Excellent advice, Dr. Greenberg. And we just have a few minutes remaining, and I want to kind of focus on or shift the focus to children. And we know that the vaccines are now available for kids 12 and over. What are you hearing about approval for the vaccines for children that are younger than 12? And I know, you know, parents are watching this very carefully because school will be starting here less than a month from now.
Great question, Scott. And I think that a couple things are important. First, vaccines are available to anyone who's 12 and over, okay? But it does take about 5 weeks to be to really get the full benefit of the vaccination. So for anyone who wants to have their child vaccinated before school, now is the time. So you're only fully vaccinated 2 weeks after your second shot. So, I definitely would strongly encourage those folks to get that done. Now, as far as the next part of the question really is a little bit more complicated, which is, what about kids that are younger than 12? And Pfizer and Moderna are both working on trials for kids that are younger than 12, and Johnson & Johnson's a bit behind those two companies. And right now, they've completed some early trials of some younger children to show safety and to establish relevant dosing for the vaccine. The trials are ongoing. They have divided the groups into three groups, really, so ages 5 to 11, 2 to 5, and 6 months to 2 years. And so they're looking to find the right dose. And so they're looking at thousands of volunteers across those age groups in multiple different countries. And as soon as they prove both safety and an effective immune response, we are likely to expect some federal authorization to provide the vaccine for children ages 5 to 11. So right now, it seems like the word on the street is that we are cautiously optimistic that the vaccine may be available by Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. And so I guess in the meantime, then we will still see some of the other safety methods in the for the younger children in school if they return to school face to face in the fall, which I think is kind of the plan, at least at the moment, in our state.
Another great question, and I think that I'd ask everyone to go do a little bit of time on the CDC website because the CDC just updated their recommendations for K through 12 schools for the fall. And so I think that really what we're looking at is a layered approach for the response here. The CDC is really hoping that anyone who is eligible will get vaccinated. And if they can't get vaccinated, then or they're too young to be vaccinated, then they're still encouraging social distancing, wearing masks, washing hands, appropriate ventilation within the classroom, and also a component of surveillance testing. So, they're also saying that they really are hoping that these measures will allow for 100% in-person learning, which I think is something that we are all really hoping for. And much of the responsibility for the deployment of this methodology is landing not with some sort of centralized organization like the CDC or the federal government, but really with schools and the school districts themselves. And so we're really hoping that we get some good granular guidance and some good efforts by the schools and the school districts to develop good plans that the parents can follow pretty easily when it comes to what parents need to do in areas of low transmission, moderate transmission, high transmission, and of course, specific guidance for teachers, staff, say high-risk activities or sports, and whatnot. So I think that we are really looking forward to schools being 100% in person, and we're hoping that everyone who can get vaccinated does so, and that in the fall, those folks that aren't vaccinated or can't be vaccinated expect to see many of the same techniques used last year with masking, social distancing, and hand washing encouraged for students of all ages.
Very good. Well, Dr. Greenberg, I always appreciate your expertise and your advice and your information on these programs and your time, of course, which is so very valuable for sharing it with me and our audiences this morning. So thank you so very much for being with us. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
Just thanks so much for having me on the program and for this opportunity to do some outreach to the community. We really appreciate it, and thank you very much. And let's all get vaccinated and wear the masks if and when it's necessary. And let's get through this and hope for a better tomorrow.
Indeed. And great advice as always. And I know, as you mentioned, for anyone 12 and over, if they want a vaccine, they are available within a short distance of wherever you happen to be within the sound of our voices. So I think the state's done a great job of rolling those out. So, Dr. Brad Greenberg, as always, thank you so very much. And we will certainly keep in touch and look for another update from you. So thank you.
Thanks so much. Take care.
You're welcome. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.